Chapter 5. Securing Our Water Needs. The challenge of securing safe and plentiful water for all regions of the world will prove to be one of our most daunting tasks. Climate change will disrupt the water cycle on a global scale. The impacts on global society, and especially the poor, can be devastating. Without drinking water, there is no survival beyond a few days. Without water for crops, there is no food. Without clean water, there is pervasive disease, especially killer infectious diseases that claim millions of children's lives each year. Without readily accessible water, available in convenient locations if not pumped directly to the household, there is drudgery in the world's impoverished villages for women and girls, who often spend hours each day walking many miles to fetch the household's water supply. And without secure water, for crops, livestock, and human use, there is conflict. Water is characterized, appropriately enough, by pervasive spillover effects, to use the economic jargon. Water use by one group or region affects the water availability and security of others. This is sometimes called hydrological interdependence. When one group withdraws some river flow for irrigation, the impact may well be reduced availability of water downstream. An upstream dam may wreak havoc on downstream communities. Often the interdependence is more insidious, hidden underground in the flow of groundwater. When a community drills boreholes for irrigation, the consequences can easily be a reduction in the flow of water to other neighboring wells or even far downstream. A tradition of first-come, first-served to the use of water can lead to massive losses for all, one of the greatest manifestations of the tragedy of the commons. Yet simply privatizing water without strong protections for the poor can end up denying the weakest part of the population the access to safe water it needs to stay alive. Privatization of water rights may be contrary to basic ecological good management as well, for example, through overexploitation of groundwater. By far, the largest demands on water by society are for agriculture. Some 70% or more of surface water use, for example from rivers, is for agriculture, with roughly 20% for industry and 10% for household use. In most places, even arid environments, ensuring water for household use is not usually a problem of sheer availability, but rather of the limitations of physical investment in wells, pumps, pipes, and the like. Water availability becomes more of a problem when we turn to the larger scale uses, industrial production, and especially agriculture. In those cases, the volume of water used may be very large relative to environmental capacities. The resulting water stress could limit the sustainability or scale of agriculture, or it could result in severe environmental degradation if society persists in heavy water use despite the ecological threats. A considerable amount of water use, especially the pumping of groundwater, is akin to mining a depleting resource. Deep groundwater is sometimes a fossil remnant of ancient lakes. These underground aquifers may be tapped, but the discharge of water by the community will not be compensated for by a recharge of the deep aquifers through the infiltration of rainwater back to the aquifer. And like a rich vein of ore, the drying up of the aquifer may be rather sudden. An aquifer may deliver a reliable flow of water for years or decades, only to run dry suddenly at some point, resulting in desperation of the population, and even large-scale migrations of populations away from the region. Human societies have grappled with water stress, and therefore with water regulation, since their beginnings, yet the scale of water stress is new. This is also the result of large-scale pollution, which is poisoning much of the fresh water that could otherwise be available. The world took an early stab at global cooperation regarding extreme water stress in the world's dry lands by adopting the United Nations Convention to Combat Desertification in 1992. The treaty sets an organizational framework for action, but it has not delivered on the needs because it has been mostly ignored by the powerful nations. We will turn to the great potential of the treaty and on how to revive it after we look first at the nature of water stress and the kinds of technological and economic approaches we can adopt in response. The hydrological cycle. All of life and all ecological processes are conditioned by the circulation of water on the planet. As is well known, salt water in the oceans covers 3/4 of the Earth's surface, and salt water accounts for 97% of the Earth's water. Of the 3% that is fresh water, most is underground. An estimated 0.3% of the Earth's water is surface water. Of that small amount, roughly two-thirds is locked in glaciers, sea ice, and the ice sheets of Greenland and Antarctica. Most of the rest is in freshwater lakes, with a much smaller amount of freshwater in rivers, wetlands, and the atmosphere. Human life, and the ecosystem generally, depends vitally on freshwater, and especially on the flows of freshwater from the land and sea to the atmosphere into precipitation, rainfall, and back to the land and sea in the hydrological cycle. From ancient times, human societies have grown up along rivers and other locations from which they could tap into fresh water supplies for food production and other uses. In recent decades, with the advent of diesel and electrical power for pumping, there has been considerable tapping of groundwater as well, most remarkably and, alas, unsustainably, in Asia. The hydrological cycle is crucial for all that follows. Water evaporates from land and mainly from the oceans and is carried into the atmosphere by convective currents. As the water vapor rises and cools, it condenses until it returns to Earth as precipitation. A considerable amount of the ocean water that evaporates is transported by wind currents over the land, where it is precipitated as rainfall. This ocean-to-land transport is balanced by an equal flow of water from the land to the sea, mainly as surface runoff in rivers. Some of the precipitation over the land infiltrates into the ground and then moves to the sea as flows of groundwater.